Serious question. How many pies do you expect at Thanksgiving? Also, the business proposition that is the fourth Thursday in November. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Monday, today the 4th of November. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Pies and Thanksgiving coming up in the second half of the program. But first, a dollar is a dollar is a dollar, right? That is money's defining characteristic, fungibility. Swap a dollar for a dollar, you still got a dollar. Kinda. It changes a bit when you get into corporate accounting, which gets us to Under Armour. The sportswear company has confirmed federal officials have been looking into its bookkeeping practices for more than 2 years now. Specifically, says the Wall Street Journal, which broke this story, credit where credit is due, both civil and criminal investigations into something called revenue recognition. Which does, of course, oblige one to ask and answer the question of what exactly revenue recognition is and why it matters. Marketplace's Mario Segarra gets us going with an explainer.
Revenue is money a company earns, and accounting for that might seem simple. You sell a product and mark that down in your books as revenue. But things get complicated really quickly. Terry Warfield teaches accounting at the University of Wisconsin.
The classic example is a cell phone.
When a company sells a phone, it might also sell you phone service, which it'll be delivering for a year. But accounting rules say that a company can't mark down a sale as revenue until it's delivered the product or provided the service. So in this case, the phone company's accountants would have to record some of the revenue up front and the rest piece by piece, even if the customer paid all at once.
It can be challenging because many times you have to make some estimates, and sometimes those estimates don't turn out correctly.
Also, sometimes companies intentionally bend or break the rules to make their earnings look better. Maybe they get overly generous with their estimates. Or maybe a manufacturing company ships a bunch of products to a retailer that hasn't ordered them or paid for them and counts that as revenue earned. Robert Rostin, principal at the financial education firm Training the Street, says if a company does this sort of thing, it's kind of a house of cards. Think about it.
So you rob from the future to make your numbers today. 3 months from now, how are we going to make our numbers? That's when the scams evolve. It's like a snowball going downhill. You need to do a bigger scam the next quarter.
We don't know the specifics of the investigations into Under Armour, but Rostin says while the Securities and Exchange Commission looks into companies' accounting practices all the time, it's rare for the Department of Justice to get involved. I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
Four of the biggest high-tech companies have decided it's time for them to chip in to get more affordable housing in this economy. Microsoft in Seattle for $500 million earlier this year, Alphabet and Facebook in Silicon Valley for $1 billion each, and then today Apple for $2.5 billion. The four of them are putting some of their money where their corporate reputations are in recognition of a problem they had at least some role in creating. Marketplace's Jack Stewart has that one.
Silicon Valley's housing costs are among the highest in the nation. An average home costs well over $1 million. The average apartment rent is nearly $3,000 a month. And helping employees with housing is not a new idea, says Robert Silverman, who studies urban and regional planning at the University of Buffalo. In the past, companies actually built houses for factory workers.
Even in the more kind of contemporary period, some of the things like, you know, providing for down payment assistance, low-interest loans, has been pursued by universities and healthcare institutions.
Apple's plans aren't focused only on its staff. It's putting $1 billion into an affordable housing investment fund for California and $1 billion into a mortgage assistance fund for first-time buyers, which it says will help schoolteachers, veterans, and service workers. Sunya Zaterman is from the Council of Large Public Housing Authorities.
The giving back here should be seen as necessary and required because these corporations are benefiting from the workforce, from the transportation systems, health systems that are already in their communities.
It's great that big employers are recognizing the problem, says Jenny Schutz at the Brookings Institution, and that they're putting pressure on local governments.
I think there are just limits to what we can expect it to do. Throwing money at a problem that isn't just about the lack of money doesn't help.
She points out other problems like a lack of land and a permitting and building process that is too complicated and expensive. I'm Jack Stewart for Marketplace.
Speaking of throwing money at things, Wall Street to begin the week, record highs on all three major indices. We'll have the details. Well, we'll have them when we do the numbers, of course. Today is the first full week of open enrollment on Affordable Care Act marketplaces, and there are a couple of big changes this year. First of all, the individual mandate is now not so much of a mandate. The 2017 tax bill changed the law so the consumers who decide not to buy healthcare plans won't have to pay a tax penalty. There are also a whole lot of insurance options outside the state and federal run exchanges. Marketplace's Erica Barris has more on how buying health insurance has become even more of a confusing and sometimes risky business.
36-year-old Alan Lastufka of Sandy, Oregon, has been buying his health care on his state marketplace since it opened 5 years ago. And every year, his premium has gone up, this year included.
It's another $40 a month. And then the deductible and max out-of-pocket are both going up another $1,400 a year.
Lastufka says it's been years since he's seen a doctor. He's thought about foregoing insurance altogether, but...
You know, if you break a leg, have a heart attack, something that is more money than you would want to afford. I can save $300 and change a month. But then what happens when you're hit with a $20, $30, $50,000 bill?
Instead of going without insurance, Lastufka could opt for a so-called skinny plan. It would only cover catastrophic health care, but it would cost him under $100 a month, around a third of what he pays now.
That sounds more appropriate and more what I'm looking for. I'm still young. I'm relatively healthy. I don't have any ongoing medical issues. And so getting a full featured plan is not very important to me right now.
Skinny plans don't comply with the Affordable Care Act. They can reject applicants with pre-existing conditions. They don't have to pay for a prescription medicine. And out-of-pocket expenses can run to hundreds of thousands of dollars. Elizabeth Benjamin advises New Yorkers on health insurance plans. She's not a fan.
Skinny plans is the nice name for it. Junk insurance may be the more accurate name for it.
The Trump administration expanded access to skinny plans last year as part of its effort to dismantle Obamacare. Benjamin says that's leading to a lot of confusion online.
You type in Obamacare, you'll see ads for ObamacarePlans.com. You'll see Obamacare-Plans.com. You'll see affordable health plans. You'll see health plan rate. You'll see a million different websites. And who knows who's running those websites?
The ACA set aside funding for navigators who would help consumers pick the best plan. But the Trump administration's slashed that funding. And that's bad news, says Christine Eibner, an economist at RAND.
Assistance from navigators, marketing, outreach may help them to make choices to enroll in health insurance coverage. And without funding for that, we may see fewer people enrolling.
Last year, enrollments in ACA plans declined slightly. This year is anybody's guess. Researchers estimate millions may bail. Cynthia Cox is with the Kaiser Family Foundation.
It's hard to separate out how much of this drop-off in enrollment is due to the repeal of the mandate penalty, how much is due to the economy improving and people getting other forms of health insurance, or how much of it is due to costs of health insurance just being unaffordable for some people.
People going without health insurance isn't what the designers of the ACA had in mind. Younger and healthier people are most likely to go without coverage. That would leave older and often sicker people in the pool, which would drive up premiums. 33-year-old Janessa Hooper of Richland, Washington, has Crohn's disease. So
the idea of not having health insurance is terrifying.
She thought about switching to a skinny plan.
There is weird stuff out there, and it feels like it should be legit.
But she realized it was a bad idea. She gets a subsidy to help pay for her ACA plan, and skinny plans don't.
I need those tax credits, because otherwise I can't afford anything.
And that may be all that keeps some people enrolled in ACA plans. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
If you've got questions about choosing a healthcare plan, check out marketplace.org for what you need to know. You think Chinese technology companies that National Security Washington is worried about? Huawei is probably the first place you go, right? Recent evidence, though, suggests the company that owns TikTok may be a close second. TikTok, for those not in the know, is a social media app that's been downloaded a billion times, a billion, all in the service of quick videos of, honestly, anything. Lumberjacks, airplanes, teenagers singing and dancing, whatever, anything. But in Washington, there are some concerns. A national security panel is said to be investigating, and Congress has asked TikTok executives to testify at a hearing tomorrow. The company has declined, all of which might just turn up the heat on the next Chinese technology firm finding itself in the crosshairs. Marketplace's Scott Tong, our bureau chief in China in earlier days, has that story.
TikTok evolved into the giant it is when its parent company in China bought the lip-syncing app Musical.ly, which had offices in the U.S. 2 years ago. That deal is assumed to be the focus of U.S. national security officials. To critics of TikTok, a key risk is that it enables Chinese censorship. TikTok is accused of deleting videos on Hong Kong protests against Beijing, and that's a slippery slope, says cyber analyst Priscilla Moriuchi at Recorded Futures.
If the application is willing to remove content about the 1989 Tiananmen Square massacre, what is next?
She says a related concern is how TikTok could target American users. Just like targeted ads on your browser, TikTok could learn about your shopping, your networks, your news sources, and blast you with pro-China propaganda.
And then tailor everything on your phone, all the advertisements, all the social media, to sway your specific point of view.
In the past, U.S. regulators have forced Chinese companies to undo acquisitions. But whether they can slow TikTok's march around the world is another question. Sam Sachs is with the New America Foundation's DigiChina program.
Even if the U.S. manages to somehow blacklist TikTok, I don't see users in places like Europe or India really listening to the United States.
She says another Chinese company on the U.S. enemies list, the telecom giant Huawei, has weathered attacks and is thriving in much of the world. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Coming up.
She took the first crates over there on the morning that she went in to have her fourth baby.
Life running a startup as a female CEO. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is up 114 today, 0.4%, 27,462. The NASDAQ picked up 46 points, 0.5%, 8,433. The S&P 500 found 11 points, 0.3%, 3,078. As I said, records for all three of those. Bank stocks rallied. Morgan Stanley found 3.1%. Bank of America lifted 1.8%. McDonald's lopped off 2.7% today after the news that CEO Steve Easterbrook was fired for having a relationship with an employee. Also gone is David Fairhurst, who had the title of Chief People Officer, Human Resources. Heard from Marielle about the problems at Under Armour. Shares tanked more than 18% on that company today. Bond prices fell. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note rose to 1.77%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. With Halloween in the rearview mirror, we are now officially in the Thanksgiving countdown. And no, this is not the setup for a retail Black Friday shopping apocalypse story. This is for those of you who are making daily adjustments to your turkey dinner spreadsheets, because come on, some of you have them, right? Fess up. If food is your business, though, let's say at a food magazine, maybe Bon Appetit. The fourth Thursday in November is a busy time and a business opportunity. Adam Rappaport is the editor-in-chief at Bon Appetit. Adam, it's good to talk to you.
Good to be here.
Let me challenge the premise here. Do I have to come up with something new every Thanksgiving?
I think you want to, I would say you'd want, like, if you, let's say you have five dishes on the table.
Yeah.
You want four staples that you know everyone is going to love, and then you want that one curveball where people are like, ooh, what's this?
Okay. What's your go-to turkey preparation method, if I could ask?
Okay. I'm a little fusty. I honestly am, like, I'm such a basic home cook. I like just home cooked sort of food. But when it comes to turkey, the big roast turkey is always a little underwhelming. The dark meat's not quite done enough. The white meat's kind of dry. I asked my butcher to separate the white and the dark, and Maria bones out the white meat, rolls it up, stuffs it with pancetta, so you have like a log, a roll, and then I take the dark meat and I slowly braise it like in white wine and everything in the oven until it's like fall apart tender like carnitas. And I shred it up and then broil it and then hit it with the gravy. And it's so good.
All right. So look, number one, I am totally coming over. But what time is dinner? And number two...
I have opinions about that.
Okay, good. Because my mother-in-law will certainly be interested. Because if it was up to her, we'd be eating at like noon. But anyway, and she's probably listening too.
You can't eat, but do not. It's dinner. It is
that's
not
what
lunch.
I'm saying. That's what
the
I'm
sun
saying.
Is down at like 4:30. You can wait till 5 p.m. to eat dinner.
All right. We'll touch on a couple other staples and then we'll move on. Talk to me about stuffing.
Okay, the most common mistake people make when making stuffing is they don't use enough stock. Add more than you think because that is what's going to keep that stuffing really moist and delicious. And as it bakes off, a lot of that stock's going to evaporate. And I challenge anyone to tell me when the last time was they had a stuffing that was, quote unquote, too moist.
Yes, true. Cranberry sauce.
Wow, controversial.
You didn't know this was going to be a quiz show, did you?
No, I mean, I got in a big thing with Bobby Flay one time on a podcast about my mom prescribes, and Andrew Knowlton, our former deputy editor, restaurant critic, loves uncooked cranberry sauce where you blitz the cranberries with like orange rind and like some spices and cinnamon, this and that. Bobby was just like, that's ridiculous. You got to cook it down so it gets nice and kind of gelatinous and everything. I like the uncooked kind in that it's bracing, it's acidic, it's tart, and it's a nice sort of balance to all that rich, creamy, buttery, fatty stuff on your plate, which I love too.
All right. Fair enough, but I'm going to say no. Next thing, and then I promise we'll move on.
Sure.
Dessert. Pies.
Okay.
Pies. Got to be pies, man.
It's got to be pie, but you know what? I don't want six pies. Just give me a little bit of dessert of something really beautifully made, and I'm good. That's just me. I hate to be Mr. Curmudgeon guy, but like one good dessert always trumps five mediocre desserts.
Amen. I'll go with that. Okay, now, I asked you all that because I spent more hours than I care to remember down the rabbit hole of Bon Appetit videos. And this you're welcome for the clicks. And this Making Perfect series that you guys have and season two being Thanksgiving. And it's awesome and it's great. But it occurs to me that you as the guy running the Bon Appetit empire, as it were, you're now doing cooking and you're doing a magazine and you're doing digital and you're doing video. Do you not have to pick a lane or are you doing everything?
Great question. Well, these days, as you know, just to turn a profit, you can't pick a lane. You have to be in multiple lanes at all times, and it becomes an issue of bandwidth and resources. What we try to do is make sure that Bon Appetit DNA surfaces confidently on every one of those platforms. And so what we did with our Thanksgiving issue, we had this hit sort of YouTube series going with all our test kitchen editors. They're big stars now. Is there a way to fuse that with the magazine? So we said, let's do Making Perfect, where we send all our editors out on these like missions for like the perfect mashed potatoes, the perfect stuffing, et cetera, as a video series, 5-6 parts, half hour each or so. And then to turn that into a magazine package, which we did, was about 18 pages in the feature wall of the November issue, wasn't that hard because that's what we do every Thanksgiving. We're already coming up with what's the best way to make the best mashed potatoes, the best stuffing. And those test kitchen editors who are our stars on YouTube, they're the ones who are always developing the recipes in the magazine anyway. So same material, but two different treatments.
And a little virality doesn't hurt. I won't name any names, but there is at least one producer here who dressed up like Brad Leone for Halloween.
That was shocking. I saw so many DMs on Instagram of like people dressing up as Brad or Claire or Molly or Carla. And I'm like, wow, like these editors who I work with are the people who normal people you go to work with, like they're now these like viral stars that couples are literally dressing up as for Halloween costumes. You're like, oh man, what did we create? The monsters we created.
That's right. All right, last thing, I'll let you go. You thinking about next Thanksgiving yet, or you want to get through this one first?
I want to get through this one, but it is shocking when you work at a monthly magazine, you're thinking about Thanksgiving in June. Like you're just trying to get into your bathing suit shape, and that's when you start eating stuffing in the test kitchen. It doesn't go well.
We should say these videos, I mean, they went swimming in a swimming hole as they were waiting for their test recipes to cook in July, right?
They're up in Cape Cod. Exactly.
Yeah. Adam Rappaport, editor-in-chief at Bon Appetit. Adam, thanks a lot. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
We've got a link, of course, to that first episode of Making Perfect. It is kind of interesting, those videos. Also, Adam's Thanksgiving tips, if you want to go over those again, they're at marketplace.org. Back in May, when the Fortune 500 list came out, which is, of course, the 500 biggest American companies by total revenue, much was made of the fact that more women than ever are leading those companies. A whopping 6% of Fortune 500 companies have CEOs who are women. 6%. But more women every day are starting and leading newer businesses that are shaping or will shape our lives. There's a list of some of them in a new book called Girls Who Run the World, 31 CEOs Who Mean Business. Diana Kapp wrote it. Diana, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Kai.
So of these 31 women, some are well-known, others less so, some less so by a lot. What's the common thread?
The common thread is these are women that are so full of moxie, girls need to hear about them. However they were raised, whatever it is that they're able to do out in the world that allows them to be women who are yes in a world that tells them no, I think is something we all need to understand.
Moxie is a good word. I love that word. What were your criteria? How did you go about formulating this list?
I wanted girls to see a bit of themselves in each of these women, and I wanted as wide a variety as I could have. So I have, you know, classic immigrant stories. I have the highly pedigreed, you know, MIT and Stanford Business School. Yeah. I have Christina Stemble, who grew up on a farm. She founded Farm Girl Flowers and never went to college. There was no scientific criteria. I was just choosing great stories. The kinds of women who are really out there making change and doing interesting things and people that I hoped would be relatable.
I can't remember if they're all entrepreneurs. Certainly the vast majority of them are entrepreneurs, and they're not all young, right? I mean, there are women who much later in life started companies. The woman with Hintwater, right?
Right. They're all in their, you know, 20s, 30s, and 40s, and there's a couple that are a bit older, but Kara Golden did start Hintwater when she was already a mom. Yeah. She was having her fourth kid. She got her water into Whole Foods and took the first crates over there on the morning that she went in to have her fourth baby. Mm-hmm. And they called her at the hospital to say, hey, the product is gone. And she honestly thought it had been stolen, but it had all sold.
The better story about Kara Golden, though, is the one later in that story about Starbucks and what happened to that.
So she had gotten her Blackberry water into Starbucks. And, you know, within a week, Howard Schultz canceled the order. I guess they decided they needed to have other kinds of product in their food case that was at a higher price point. But anyway, someone in that 1 week time that it was in Starbucks tried the water, and she got a whole nother account that was even larger than the Starbucks account. So it just goes to show you that life for these entrepreneurs is just a mix of up and downs, and you really can't avoid having the knockdowns, but it's about getting back up.
For all that this appears to be the moment for women in CEO jobs and in business in general, what's the risk that books like this and others, right, we celebrate them, we point to them, and yet somehow we don't get more of them?
Oh, we're getting more of them. I could have chosen 200 more women to feature in this book, and I hope I get a chance to do a second volume because they're out there, they're doing interesting things, and I'm telling you, things are going to change.
Diana Kapp, it's called Girls Who Run the World. Diana, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Kai.
We've got a couple of those profiles from Diana's book on our website. Check them out, marketplace.org, if somehow you forgot our web address. Oh, by the way, if you like hearing about and from CEOs, we talk to them all the time. You can hear the full interviews on our Corner Office podcast. This final note on the way out today, in which Mark Zuckerberg has apparently decided that at least part of what ails his company can be solved by a rebranding. Henceforth, Facebook will be known as Facebook. All caps, because change is good, I guess. More substantively, the rebranding will extend to Facebook's other big properties, Instagram and WhatsApp, as you know. You can actually see in those apps that they are owned by Facebook. I couldn't do it a third time. Props to Molly Wood, by the way, for that little gag. Okay, we got to go. The Dow Industrial is up 114 points today, 0.4%. The NASDAQ up 46 points, about 0.5%. S&P 500 found 11 points, 0.3%. Our daily production team includes Bridget Bodner, Andy Corbin, Maria Hollenhorst, Sean McHenry, Daisy Palacios, and Bennett Purser. Eliza Mills is our special projects producer. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.